Hey, what's up, y'all? Welcome back to On Your Mental. If you're new to the podcast, my name is Ruben.
My name is Kabir.
And we're filming this intro for today's episode after we filmed the intro for the next episode that'll come out. We forgot to mention something. So in this episode today, we have people from the Life of Giving Association who are here to talk about their nonprofit organization in Vancouver that helps out people affected by poverty. So this is a great conversation about that. And we do also talk in this episode about mental health for the younger generation, kind of what they've gone through in high school more recently compared to our own experiences. So this is a great talk, but we also want to say yesterday, for you watching this now, there's an episode on the Banana Boys podcast that just came out featuring the two of us. So if you want to go check that out this week or next week in between our episodes, whenever, feel free. You can go and look at that, and the link will be in the description for this episode. Anyways, we hope you enjoy. If you're not already, make sure you subscribe to the channel, like this one if you like it, and we'll see you in a second when the episode starts. Peace.
To take this video off right now.
Yeah, bro, it's warm. I can't though. Man. It's warm. Even with the window open again this time, it's like I'm looking forward to summer being done only for the podcast. Otherwise, like, keep it going, you know? But for the podcast, this is a lot in here. If it gets too hot, take it off, man. It's all good.
It's fine. We'll be fine.
Gotta rep the brand.
Exactly.
Got
the mug right on the camera shot.
Boom.
Like, boom.
Let's get it. We're plugging all the merch today.
Let's do it.
Speaking of wearing the brand, we can kind of like jump right into things here. Yep. First of all, welcome to the both of you, Shazel and Parth.
Thank you.
Y'all are representing Life of Giving Association in Vancouver.
Yep.
Briefly, I'll share, like, you two reached out to me, and there's a third in your team who's not here right now, and it's just because there's not enough space. I don't have enough microphones. I can't have a fifth person in the room unless I want to kick cabs out, but you know, I guess I like them. So y'all reached out and you had said that you wanted to come on and talk about kind of like a bit of what you do, which we'll get into in a moment.
Yeah.
But also to touch on mental health in the space that you're in. So the first question will just be like, what is Life of Giving and why did you start it? And for the people listening and watching, we'll also get into a little bit about the two of you and your own experiences with mental health and your thoughts around it. But then we'll dive into some questions about Life of Giving and what that is for later on. But first of all, why did you start it? What is it? What's Life of Giving?
Well, Life of Giving is a nonprofit organization that a group of adults and youths have started. Our purpose is to, you know, tackle the aggravating poverty and food disparity that we see in Vancouver. We just basically help out the people that are in need within the community. We have held four events.
Oh, you had your fourth now.
Yep.
Sweet.
Four events. I know.
Those events were like, you know, distributing food, example, like pizza, burgers, and like boxes of rice and bottles of water. And we received like lots of love and support from people within the community. So we aim to do, you know, one food event per month.
Sweet.
And why we started this is, you know, my dad, basically, he initially like brought up the idea. You know, he's a taxi driver and he has been in the taxi industry for like 26 years. And so, he's been all around downtown. You know, he practically lives there, right? So he sees a lot of, you know, people living on the streets and like he's like sees all of it. And so he just one day randomly he just brought up the idea to our family. And then from there, we, you know, we just created this organization with a couple of friends, which Parth came in, you know,
right?
And then so that's basically why we created this. And we're just, you know, raise awareness to the situation because we feel like, you know, it's very underlooked. Like, people really don't talk about this situation that much.
It's pretty easy to avoid. I mean, for us all growing up and living in the Metro Vancouver area, we know how big of a I don't even like to say issue, but it is an issue. It's a point of concern, and it's you see what goes on in the downtown east side of Vancouver. People who come to visit will point out that this is just this one section of the city that's just so bad. But why? How did it get to that point? You know what I mean? Yeah. What can we do to make it better and improve? Because you can only rely on the government for so much, you know what I mean? But
exactly.
When people, I guess, step up like what you're doing, you get some positive impact in the space, which is good.
Yeah. That's basically what life forgiving is.
How do you guys know each other, by the way?
School.
Yeah.
School.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. High school.
High school. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
We graduated from the same high school, and we both kind of got closer during COVID.
Right.
And then from there, as soon as, like, you know, obviously we went to the gym together as well. The typical things that you do in high school.
Yeah. Mm.
And then I got closer with his brother. And as soon as the idea kind of came up, like, hey, you know what? We want to start this organization, and we think that it'd be really great to kind of give back to the community, but also be youth giving back to the community.
Mm.
We were like, I saw the opportunity and I was like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like,
right.
Not only did we just finish high school, but at the same time, we have a bunch of like free time before we're going to university. And it's like a great period of time to start something and get it on its legs before we kind of go into the next chapter of life.
So. Right, right. And so you've got other people helping you out with it too then, right? You said that there's some like adults involved as well, or like, I mean, y'all are adults now technically, but I mean, you got some other people that are helping you rather than just the three of you.
Yeah.
That's good.
And that's like a really big thing too, is that I think as soon as people see an opportunity to kind of step up to the plate, a lot of people want to help.
Yeah.
But just the kind of initial step is what people, I think, kind of struggle with, because we all have different things happening in our lives and we're all dealing with like our own struggles. And I know that's a lot of what the podcast talks about. And so giving people an opportunity, hey, you know, we're holding this event next week. We're holding this event in a month. If you want to help, if you just want to donate or, you know, even sending like kind words really like supports the team and makes the team feel like, you know, we're doing something that's making a difference in the community.
I didn't even think of that. It can give you kind of an opportunity to know that you are doing something good, you know. So you like, create this space.
Like in a way motivates people, like Bart was saying. Like a lot of people like reached out to us, you know, they're like, oh yeah, please like let us know for the next event, we'll help out, volunteer. And it just makes us feel better because we're doing a good thing.
You guys are doing a good thing. Cool. So yeah, I appreciate that you did reach out in general. I think it's awesome that you're here and I'm happy we're about to have this conversation. And the things that we want to get into first, which is kind of about you too and your own experience with mental health, I'm curious about especially your experience having just recently graduated high school. We've talked about it in a few episodes, like our own experience when we went through high school, mental health was non-existent. You know what I mean? Like I was thinking back on it today, there really wasn't one class where anybody really talked about anything. No teachers like sat down with us and talked about it.
Nothing.
And so
it was only when like if you had a problem, they'd be like, oh, go see your counselor. That's the gist of it.
Y'all saying is making me nervous now. I think it maybe hasn't changed. Maybe it's still the same. But I'd love to hear first from the two of you on a personal level. Where did your kind of journeys with mental health start, and has it even started? Because for me, I didn't get into mental health until I was 20 years old. It was 2016, and we had some stuff going on around us that kind of put it in the forefront and made you have to think about it. And started donating to Movember that year, that kind of thing, and became attached to it each year since. That was my starting point. I was 20 years old, but y'all are 19, right? Both.
We're both 18.
Yeah. What 18. The fuck? 18.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
We're both 18.
Yeah. Have to be on camera. Now.
Y'all are both 18, and. Yeah, I'm just curious what it's been like for you so far. Has mental health even like come into the picture for you in your lives yet?
Well, for me, at least, I would say it didn't really impact me or suffer. I didn't really suffer from mental health, but, you know, COVID hit, right? And a lot of my friends, you know, speaking from experience, I've seen my friends, you know, that was a very tough time for everyone, I would say, because, you know, you couldn't go to the gym, you know, you were in a lockdown. It was like a complete cycle of like, you know, sleeping, waking up, eating, doing nothing at home, just sleeping again,
maybe games,
gaming, and just like a complete full cycle of that for like months and months. And so people, you know, most of my friends, you know, they got like, they suffered from mental health, you know, they got anxiety, depression, and it impacted us because we didn't also have like social connections. We couldn't do anything outside doors, and school wasn't like, it was fully like online.
Yeah.
And then grade 12, mm-hmm. it was the only like, it was the starting of like a normal year.
Mm-hmm.
And so thanks to like, you know, great credits to social media, social media has a big impact on what people see, and it's revolved around social media, and people talk about mental health in social media, and so it's a known topic now.
Yeah.
And so you know, people like talking about their experiences and what mental health is, it helps a lot. And we see in schools, they now implement like presentations, you know, they have more resources.
Yeah.
So like they tell you that if you need help, if you are suffering from mental health, we are here for you. You are not alone.
Huh.
So it's a good thing. They just don't say, you know, go to the counselor.
Right.
Cool. You know? Cool. But yeah, it's a different era now.
No kidding.
So yeah, things have changed.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. And I'll dig more into that in a minute. But
yeah,
for yourself, what's mental health look like for you?
As far as mental health goes, I think that at the beginning of high school, obviously, like I've always been a very kind of stressed kid, I want to say. You know, I think for me, being introverted generally and like feeling like I always need to be prepared for every situation. At the beginning of high school, like just starting high school, I remember like that first day, like clear, super duper clear. Like I remember thinking like, you know, what's every class going to be like? Mm-hmm. Who am I going to be sitting next to? Simple things like that. And at that time, you don't really think about it as mental health or you take it that deeply. It's just, you know, I'm worried about something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as the years kind of went on and on, grade 11, grade 12 coming after COVID, just feeling like putting a lot of pressure on yourself and also feeling a lot of pressure. I know that, you know, you want everything in life to be great and you want it to, you know, go super duper smooth. And you just really want things to work out the way that you think they should.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, as life goes in our 18 years of experience, we know that that's not always the case. And so because of that, you know, there were often situations where I had to figure out what strategies I could utilize to kind of feel like I was in a more safe position, feel more confident in myself, I think is a really big thing. I know that in a previous podcast, Kabir, you talked about reading David Goggins' book.
Yeah.
That is also something that I was lucky enough to do. And so kind of reading that reading that book and listening to his interviews, things like that, really kind of finding a different perspective on what mental health should look like and also mental strength. I think being mentally tough is a huge thing that like is really undervalued. You know, everyone wants to go to the gym and like look huge and look like, you know, like you can deal with every problem, but if you're super duper sensitive, then that's not going to help you. And the Jordan documentary, anyone that knows me knows that I love the Jordan documentary.
Yes, sir. He loves it.
And I know you brought it up in a podcast as well.
Ruben's watched it numerous times.
Dude, so like anytime, you know, you face a problem, I go episode 7 right at the end. And Jordan, you know, just looks straight into the camera and he goes, "You don't know what winning feels like." And it's, you know, it's funny, but at the same time, I think it gives us a different perspective on like what it takes to be successful. And like, we're so young that we don't know, like we haven't felt a lot of the struggles that we're going to in terms of real life situations. But at the same time, you know, we felt some of the struggles that school might put you through, the little pieces of stress that you might have, like dealing with friendships and this and that. And so just kind of, I was like, always wanting to get a jump start on, you know, how can I figure out what makes someone more mentally tough in life? And so that's where like the David Goggins book,
starting the readings,
Jordan, the Jordan documentary, Jordan book, and kind of everything. We could talk about that documentary for the next 50 minutes.
Yeah, right.
That's a nonstop.
It sounds like there's a lot of focus on like avoiding mental health issues, which is like, it's a good and like huge part of mental health, right? I mean, being able to be mentally sound and having that mental toughness is of course very important. Something that I feel like maybe we've learned over time is that there's also just like recognizing the positive side of things too.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Like that's a piece of like the mental health puzzle, is like being aware of when things are going good, why they're going good, like what makes you happy, like where are you finding like happiness in your life, you know? But also being aware of the things that maybe might put you down, kind of a downward spiral, you know?
Yeah.
I have a quick question about just like the school stuff you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about the fact that y'all just went through two of your years in high school
right
in a pandemic.
Yeah.
It's tough. Oh, yeah.
Shit. The hell was that like?
Yeah, honestly, it was like nerve-wracking at first. Mm. Then it was awesome. Because yeah. we were literally at home and, you know, there was not a worry in the world. As soon as we found out that, I think the government told the education ministry that, you know, kids' grades cannot drop. If you're passing, you're passing. No one logged on ever again.
Really? They That's said that?
What, yep, yeah. A lot of people just kind of checked out.
Nice, eh?
Yeah.
It was so nice for us.
A lot of people just checked out. And so I would say that was the end of our grade 10 year. Mm-hmm. And then once we went into grade 11, and this is the perspective of the Vancouver School Board, it might be a little bit different around BC. Mm. But when we went into grade 11, we were 2 weeks in person and then 2 weeks online for two courses at a time.
Yeah.
And so what that meant,
that's it.
Yeah. So it was, so it's a semester system, but in quarters, I forget what they call it.
I think it was like two courses in 10 weeks.
Yeah. 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 And so that was great because a lot of the time you got time to really build social relationships and you were given time to kind of grow as a person, I think, not only really focused on your courses, but at the same time, when you had really tough courses, you know, wink, wink, Chem 11. when you had really tough courses, you were left with 10 weeks and you were scrambling and you were stressed. And so it was a little bit of both worlds. I would say that ultimately coming into grade 12, it didn't really affect us. And I want to give a lot of credit to teachers because teachers, and yeah, I know you're not surprised, like teachers are the heroes at the end of the day. Like they really, you'll get certain teachers that really you can tell, even if, you know, they might be mean to you or a little bit rude to you, they really care, and they care about like where you're going to end up when you're done and you're graduated high school. So I give a lot of credit to teachers for helping kind of guide us along the way during COVID.
Yeah. And they've had to like shift their whole curriculum and everything, the way they're teaching and all that. But yeah,
it's tough. Their job is also tough, and being a student is also tough, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, as Parth was saying, grade 12 was a little easier because of those teachers guiding us. And, you know, grade 12 was like, oh, it was sort of like heaven because we could have like lots of events, you know, sports too, like sports started happening. And so, you know, grade 12 was a normal year, I would say. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's just weird.
Yeah. You know, I would have liked to experience a little bit of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Go back to high school, eh?
This guy, man. Not a big fan of high school?
No. I miss high school.
Oh, really?
All the time.
Every day.
Because I would see my friends every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. That's probably like the biggest part of it. It's just the social aspect of it, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, 2 years without that fully being in place, starting to come back where you're doing the little hybrid kind of setup, and then grade 12 actually being a real year, that'd be nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you kind of touched on like them doing events and presentations around mental health.
Yeah.
But what has, like, what are some details around that? You know what I mean? Like, what did mental health actually look like in your school?
I would say that mental health was something that is covered more now than it was maybe during the time that you guys are in high school, but it's still not at the level that it should be at. So right now we're seeing things like, you know, Bell's Let's Talk Day. We see a lot of big corporations get involved in talking about mental health and the stigma around it. But at the same time, we don't see it to the level that it should be. For example, we have classes where you know, they're specifically trying to prepare you for life after high school. We have a class called Career Life Connections, I believe it
is. Sure, like planning.
Planning. So they've done a better job of transitioning from just getting you to fill out a bunch of worksheets and then sending you on their way. Like teachers, a lot of the time, the teachers that you have for those types of courses do genuinely care. Hey, you know what? Here's how you do a resume. Yeah. Here's how you should act during an interview, things like that. And in those moments, we also get things that surround mental health. Like, hey, how are you guys doing during exam week? How are you guys doing in your courses? Do you need time to just, you know, kind of unpack during this block? Like, we'll give you that time. And really, it's teachers like that that go out of their way.
Yeah.
But in terms of it being enforced, I wouldn't say that there is a strong feeling of, you know, we have to talk to these students about mental health.
Yeah.
There is still that sense of, you know what, if a kid's going through it, then we can lend them a hand. But, you know, if they're okay, then there's no reason to talk to them. And because of that, a lot of the time what happens is you'll have kids who are great at kind of putting themselves in a shell and just walking through everyday life like everything's fine. And it's not just kids, it's adults too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But and no one ever thinks that they need help. And then you go down a rabbit hole of like misery, really.
I feel like there's a hole there, you know, and I guess you're saying it with there needing to be more work done. What kind of stuff would you want to see done in schools around mental health? Because I'm imagining like if they're just talking about it, what's the good in talking about it?
I guess so. But more acknowledgement is definitely
more acknowledgement better. Is a step in the right direction.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
I would like to see like, I don't know, tools, like actually learn something about how to manage your mental health in school.
Right.
Anyways. Thank you for the background about y'all. Cabs, did you want to share anything about mental health when you were in school? Anything at all?
No, man. I was pretty much just going through it kind of like in my own shell. I would love seeing my friends playing basketball like every day.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really paying too much attention to it, you know? I would just, I was keeping busy with everything. So wasn't really a thought. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those conversations weren't really going on at home. I don't know if I needed them at the time.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Cool.
Not much.
Yeah. I'm just happy to hear that it is starting earlier, even if it's not like perfect.
Right. You know? Right. If I could jump in quickly, how has that changed now? Like, I know if you're, you know, going out of the way to read like Goggins and things like that, what do you think has really changed with how you deal with your mental health now compared to maybe in high school?
I think I'm just like way more aware of anything that's thrown at me now.
Yeah.
Still trying to figure out if that's a good or a bad thing, you know? Because then I might be overthinking things sometimes or I'm not sure if I should just shut that out. I'm like, oh, I'm just being a little bit sensitive.
Right.
But in the more stressful times or if I'm feeling overwhelmed, I definitely feel like I've got more tools on the belt to, you know, handle the situation.
Yeah.
So overall, way better.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. And then conversations about mental health, I'm way more open to.
Right.
Especially like here with you guys.
Yeah.
Didn't think I'd be doing this even like a year ago.
Yeah.
So, for sure. Always improving, growing with the podcast for sure. Yeah.
It's a work in progress.
Yeah. Always will be.
Yeah. I feel like when we were younger, and maybe y'all can relate to this too, it's like the approach to mental health is very reactionary. And I think now it's like you're preparing for when stuff is going to happen. You know how to handle it, you know, feels better. It's kind of like that mental toughness, right?
Yeah.
Mental strength.
And something that I think Kabir kind of talks about that is important is when you have mental toughness, figuring out what the line is when you're being too sensitive and when, you know, you might need to be a little bit more mentally resilient. So I think like that fine line, like, you know what, I'm not going to deal with something like this. I'm not going to deal with someone talking to me like this. Or, you know, maybe I'm just a little bit too sensitive. Maybe it was just said in a joking manner. I should just take it as a joke. So that like fine line, and that's a very simple example, but I think that's a big thing, like figuring out, because you don't want to become so mentally resilient that, you know, you're no longer able to go through situations day to day as, you know, feeling emotions, feeling the happiness, like the
being
peak,
there,
exactly, you know? The peak of happiness, but also knowing that that comes with, you know, a lot of sad times potentially. And so feeling both sides of it.
You can't have one without the other.
Exactly. Sure.
Life's all about balance.
All about balance.
Yeah. Balance everywhere, I swear.
Everywhere, man, I swear to God. It's everywhere. Man, well, thanks for the background about you too and a little bit about mental health. And that's like our angle on the podcast, right? But we definitely want to get into more about what you two and then your third partner who's not here. You can give him a shout out, by the way. Like,
shout out to you, know, but
there you go.
Probably all for you somewhere.
Yeah. Right? He's just like watching from outside.
He's just raising his hand like this.
Edit him in the background for a frame.
Just send me a photo. I'll just put him up there.
Sounds good.
Cool. So we'll get into a little bit about Life of Giving, a little bit more about what you see and what you've been doing, and the perspective that you've maybe gained in starting this. So in your experience and what you've been doing with Life of Giving, you've hosted now 4 events, downtown East Side. Has it been downtown East Side?
Yeah, East Hastings. Cool.
Giving out foods, water, stuff that is important to these people who are definitely in need. For some additional context, the poverty crisis in Vancouver is crazy. It is, if you just Googled East Hastings, Vancouver, for people listening and watching, you will see exactly what we mean. It's definitely something that needs help. So Life of Giving, y'all are some of the people contributing to that help. In what you've seen, and maybe contrasting it to your own experience as young people, what are some of the maybe unique struggles that you'll see in youth who are suffering from extreme poverty or in these kinds of situations?
It's devastating as it is if you're suffering from poverty, but when you're a youth and you're struggling from poverty, it's like truly heartbreaking. And like when we were down in the East Hastings, we have seen a couple of youths that come to us, you know, and then we give them food, and it was, they're like, it was truly devastating to see that, because we are youths or young adults now. And so they do have their own unique struggles. Let's just say, for example, you know, a youth in high school is suffering from poverty. He or she would feel neglected from the society because, you know, you wouldn't have the chance to do the stuff that other kids would be able to do, right? For example, like, you know, your friends are going out, but you can't go out because, you know, you can't spend money and all that stuff, financial stability and stuff like that. And so, you know, they would feel neglected, and then, you know, they would feel alone. And it's then it relates back to mental health, right? If that happens, then, you know, you probably would go into depression, and then you will struggle for mental health, and then it's all connected. It's just really a big struggle.
I can imagine it would be kind of like isolating, right? Like exactly like you say. And yeah, people who are in poverty and homeless will still go to school. You don't necessarily hear about it all the time, right? It's kind of like, I feel like there may have been someone in your school. I could be totally wrong, so I'm not even going to go down that path, but I thought that maybe there was somebody who like just struggled financially a fair bit.
I'm sure there was.
And they come with, like, you know, like wearing the same clothes all the time, and kids can be dicks, you know what I mean? And so like if you want to like and I don't know if it's, hopefully it's gotten better with the awareness around mental health and seeing that kind of thing. But I think back to, I don't know, just stuff that you might see on TV about high schools and stuff. Like if a kid was wearing the same clothes every day to school, like they might get bullied just for something like that, but it's so far out of their control. So I can imagine, it'd be kind of heartbreaking even having a face-to-face conversation with someone who's going through that when you're down there. That's intense.
Yeah. I've always wondered, like how many youth are like living in poverty downtown, you know, because you don't really see it. When we're down there, we just see older adults, right? It's something I've always wondered. But you guys do get like quite a bit of youth down there.
Right? Yeah, we see a lot of them, a few of them. But like, crazy fact is that, like, you know, 25% to 50% of the homeless population, they all struggle from like some sort of mental health. So like, it all connects back to mental health, poverty and mental health. They're all connected. So that's like, it's a big, deep topic.
And even with that stat being like recorded, it's probably way, you know, less than the actual amount.
Underreporting,
because a lot of people struggle with mental health but don't really understand, you know, maybe what they're going through. And I think only now when we're starting to have conversations about it, we're able to, you know, pinpoint it as, okay, maybe I need to get some help with my mental health. But, you know, going back 30, 40 years, you might just see something like, you know, you're just not strong enough to deal with problems. You're too sensitive, that sort of thing. So I think that generally now we're seeing more information about it. And in turn, we're able to kind of catch the cycle or start to kind of try to catch the cycle before it starts to happen again. Like, I know in a lot of cases when children grow up in poverty, they're just put back into that situation as adults. And as a society, we just kind of, you know, turn a blind eye to it because we think, you know, why don't they just get a job? That's a big one. You know, they should just get a job. And something like that is such a simple and almost like disgusting way of putting a label on people who have a lot or who might be dealing with some mental health issues, might have been caught in hard times and have, because of that, you know, gotten to the place where they are now. And it can happen to any one of us. So
it's an endless cycle.
It's tough. I mean, what you're doing, providing food and water, I mean, drinks, that's one piece of a very large puzzle in like how to help these people going through this. Because you make a good point about mental health. I mean, addiction itself is also a mental health issue is, yeah, technically, yeah, like within that same umbrella. Mm-hmm. And of course, like a lot of people in poverty, especially in the downtown east side, mm-hmm, do struggle with addiction as well. You see it, you'll walk down the street, you see it.
Yeah.
But that's not like a fault of their own. And I hate that thing. And I've seen that same messaging where it's, yeah, like, yeah, just get a job, just go do something.
Yeah.
I think we take for granted how easy it is to come back to your home every day, mm-hmm, that is in the same space, know that it's there, know that it's safe. You have a place to get changed, get dressed, and then go to work the next day. If you have to go to work and come back and your home is gone or you cannot return to the same place, how do you have consistency in your ability to hold a job? It's such an ignorant like answer when people say, right, that. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into a little bit about Tent City and Tent Cities in quotations here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just last week, was it last week now?
Yeah,
I think it was. The police were now starting to dismantle,
yeah,
Tent City.
So it was a fire hazard.
They're, yeah, considering, right, yeah,
a fire hazard, yeah.
And God, you can see it both ways. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
You can see from the statistic angle, because they do point out that they've had to deal with a very large number of fires there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember what the exact number is, but I remember hearing it and being shocked at the number of fires that would break out on like a weekly basis in this Tent City, which is a concentrated area in the downtown east side where a lot of homeless people have put up their tents as a place to stay. Because where else do you go? So I wanted to get your thoughts and like, we can all have a discussion about it. What do you think about that idea of dismantling of Tent City? Because you've been out there and you've been helping people. You've been seeing a little bit of what they go through, right? I haven't. My only experience with downtown Eastside was when I used to go to SFU, I would take the bus and I'd pass by it. You know what I mean? I'd look, and back then it wasn't as bad. COVID fucked that up a lot, yeah, more than, yeah, we even realize. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about that idea? What do you think about the idea of destroying homeless people's homes?
It's totally tragic, because, mm-hmm, when you take someone and you remove them from their home, no matter what their home might look like, and if people think that, you know, it's not really a place where they can live, you're really removing them from a place where they might feel safe, or they might feel like they are able to return back to, like, mm-hmm, you kind of touched on. And so obviously with the entire fire hazard situation, having the, I believe it was the fire chief that came out and said, you know, this is something that needs to be done. That's certainly a perspective that we can look at and understand. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, saying that something like this needs to be done and not having a solution for it is, mm-hmm, really where the big problem comes in. Because sometimes you'll see the city blame the province, and the province will come right back and say, mm-hmm, you know what, you guys should have figured this out. And we don't have, I know that it's something that they've talked about a little bit on mainstream media, mm-hmm, but we don't have enough housing units to take all these people and give them another place to be. Mm-hmm. And so this entire idea of, hey, we're going to take your home from you, and then we're just going to tell you good luck.
Yeah.
Like, hey, like, figure it out. Good luck. And hope feels you do great.
Yeah,
exactly. And any person that I think looks at it and understands, you know, that a lot of these people are trying to get back on their feet or would like to get back on their feet knows that you wouldn't want to see any of your friends or family go through something like this. The fact that it can happen to any one of us, and now suddenly the city is able to just kind of rip it away from them and then say good luck, mm-hmm, is really devastating. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the biggest problem that I have with it, mm-hmm, is.
You know, I understand where they're coming from. You know, fire hazard. Like, I believe last month there was a fire in one of the buildings in downtown East Hastings.
Yeah.
So I get, yeah, the fire
hazard. That was a big fire.
Yeah, it was a big fire.
I remember that, actually, now you say,
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So I get the fire safety hazard part. But, you know, as Parth was saying, you know, we need a solution. You know, mm-hmm, you can't just take away their homes and, mm-hmm, then not, like, you know, have a solution for where they're going to live.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. They have no solution, no plan of where they're going to go.
There's no contingency on, like, what's next.
That's why, like, I don't know, it's very, like, devastating to see, mm-hmm, like, what the city's becoming.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's a very deep topic for, like, a lot of people.
Especially also living here in Vancouver, right? Vancouver, I guess. Yeah, I mean, we're in Richmond, but whatever. Yeah.
And like, quite frankly, like we like had experience with them. Like the people in downtown East Hastings, they are nice people.
They're good people.
They're good people. Like, but yeah, it's just stupid, I guess, I would say.
I've read a few of the articles recently when about them dismantling all the tents. And then watched a few interviews, but yeah, a lot of people that were living there, they're like, oh, we're just gonna, well, this is really stupid. We're just gonna move a block away and then come back after when it's all done. But yeah, again, there's, I'm thinking like, what's the point, you know? Other than, of course, the fire safety, for sure. I didn't know about the statistics about all those fires. Dude, it
was like, I want to say it was like over 100 fires within a month.
Wow.
Jeez. Yeah. And they can be small fires, right? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be like a home burning, right? But still, like, fires breaking out along the sidewalk and like amongst the tents. Like, that's not great.
No, that's definitely not.
But where else are they supposed to go, man? That's the thing that pisses me off.
Right.
It's, I don't know. It's very Vancouver to do something like this. You know what I mean? To take down Tent City. And
you get all these ignorant people going, get him out of here.
Such an eyesore.
Yeah. Then they go to bed.
Fuck you, man. Yeah, exactly. Like, you guys have a home. You have it, exactly, to your point. We can never imagine what it's like because we haven't done it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's the same idea as, like, you can never imagine what someone has gone to prison has been through. You know what I mean? Like, you can't experience that because you're not there. Mm-hmm. It's the same idea with homelessness. We're not homeless, right? Mm-hmm. We're lucky and fortunate enough to have lived decent lives. We have a roof over our heads. I've been able to move out of my home. You know what I mean? Things like that.
Yeah.
And some of these people had that too, and it was taken away. And so it's so ignorant for people to look at that. And you'll see comments all over social media and be like, yeah, that's a good thing. Get him out of there. I just think it's disgusting. Yeah. They said, there was someone saying how, and it's like, I'll ask you, like, I think this is stupid, but people would throw out the argument, like, if you think that the city should do something for them, like, why don't you just bring them into your home? I don't know how to respond to that.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
At its basics, it's a good looking argument.
Right.
Like, oh, you think that there's a problem, why don't you solve it?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you're talking about one of the biggest cities in the country versus an individual person. Mm-hmm. So I think it not only lies in just helping the people, but also acknowledging that it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the time and this is to no one's fault really, because cities are going to operate like everything is, you know, a green light and, you know, this city's great, come visit us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're absolutely awesome and you're going to have a blast. But like you said, people that come here and they might go around the area go, hey, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Like, we didn't.
This was nowhere in the description.
We didn't see this in the pamphlet.
Like, yeah.
Right. So I think that just taking the next step of being like, you know, this is a problem and we're actively working to solve it and actually seeing that progress take place is something that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, the real differential between, hey, why don't you just bring them into your home? Sure, you can bring one person into your home. But, you know, this is a big problem that we need to tackle as an entire city.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just there's one person on the street, let's give them a hand. You know, this is a cycle. And we've talked about it a little bit. We touched on it. Unless we get to the root of the actual cycle, the beginning of the circle, where are we going to be able to end the problem?
Yeah.
This, like, whole crisis, I would say, it's underlooked upon. Parth was saying, it's one of the top cities in Canada. You know, it's greatly known for its expensiveness and tourism, but people don't see what's happening and the crisis that's happening in Vancouver, and so people don't know what the background is. And so the city, I would say, there's only so much we can do.
Yeah,
you know, like, there's only so much we can do to help them, but if we don't, as Parth was saying, go to the root cause, it won't go anywhere.
Right.
And so I feel like in the future, the city needs to have a full on organized plan solution and execute it. And so that we all as a community, every single like Vancouver residents should be able to help and get this you know, crisis and solve it.
I'd love to pick all of our brains on that, if that's okay. Kind of like the next steps, you know, like what would you like to see done? What do you think the way forward would be? Because I completely agree with everything that's been said so far, right? You do need to get to the root cause, because to even use Life of Giving Association as an example here, do you want to be doing these events 5 years later, going and handing out food on the downtown east side, or should it be better? Should you not have to do that, perhaps? You know?
Right,
I think that kind of way forward would be great, but what does it look like? It's awesome to sit here and imagine, like, oh, it'd be perfect if blah blah blah, but what would the if be? What would perfect look like to you? What is the way forward, do you think?
Well, first of all, I would say poverty is an issue that high school and schools in general don't really talk about. So it would be really great to see that, you know, they raise awareness from the start, from youths, and talk about poverty and how it can affect your, you know, mental health and everything that you do in life.
And how it can affect your city.
Yeah.
Right?
And so that's like, at the end of the day, whatever happens in the future, it's baby steps. It's going to take time. Like, you know, this the solution, the situation is not going to solve under like one night. It's a long-term thing. So it's going to take time, but educating the youth is one big step that I think they should execute for the future.
Increase that awareness from an earlier standpoint, from an earlier point, rather than leaving it up to the adults. Cool. I like that one. Parth, Cabs.
Education, but, for sure. Educating the youth, just, I think, doesn't have to be just mental health in education or injecting that in the curriculum, but like, prepping for life more, you know, because the people that end up on the downtown east side or anywhere around the world in that situation, it's not always just from, you know, they're an adult and then that happened, you know. It's not like, it can be starting as early as in your youth. It can be having financial troubles build up after high school. It can be alcoholism building up after high school. It's being unprepared for life and not being given the tools, I think. So I think education is going to be a big part in that. I think that, in my opinion, might be the best route to take. Like, because even when you guys were saying, like, in high school or towards the end of like grade 11, 12, I didn't get the preparing for interviews type stuff. I didn't get that. Did you?
No dice.
Because like, that would be nice.
Our planning class was,
it was like you said, like filling out shit, making sure you have that done so you can graduate.
And they've completely eliminated that part of it also. So we no longer have to fill out papers just so we can graduate, which is nice.
So I don't know, catching it early.
I didn't even think of it that way too. It's like raising awareness around like what can happen if you are not prepared. Right. I didn't think about it like that. That's a good way to kind of phrase it. Cause you're right that maybe if you took that seriously, and if it was in front of you from a very young point, things like avoiding alcohol, like being responsible around substance abuse, you know what I mean? That could maybe prevent someone from falling down that path, which could lead into poverty.
I mean, the DARE program in grade three, four, grade five, who cares about that? Bro, then
it was a tremendous failure. I don't know. I mean, you said you're going into law.
Hopefully.
I mean, when I started in university, I took like criminology courses, and one of the professors at SFU had been a part of the creation of like DARE. And she was saying how it was just like an absolute failure on all levels. People laugh at it now because it's just, it did not do any of what it set out to do, which was to stop people from doing drugs, right? Didn't do shit. So it's a joke. So there has to be a better way about going around it. You can't pretend that people aren't going to do stuff, but to introduce that sense of responsibility and knowing what the risk is in reality, rather than just, oh, don't do it. You know, that doesn't fucking solve anything.
Exactly. And I think just the simplest way of looking at that is when you tell, you know, a kid not to do something as a parent, the kid's going to go out and do that. Like, you know, be careful around the outlet. Like, oh, why do I need to be?
Grab a fork and check this out.
100%. But exactly. So really making people understand with education and making them see what the problem is and how we might be able to end the stigma around the problem. Mm. Like you said, we don't want to be out there in 5 years and just be at the same place where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we much rather be in a place where, you know, we're giving workshops to kids maybe,
sure,
and educating them. Hey, this is what a lot of people are dealing with. This is what you can do if you need help, like that sort of thing. But at the same time, the way that things are going now and the way that things have gone for decades at a time, mm-hmm, we're not the first nonprofit organization that is saying, you know, hey, we have this problem and we're going to end all the problems in Vancouver. We know that it's very, very possible and 90-95% chance that we're still going to have events in 5 years,
mm-hmm,
that are going to be, you know, handing out food because there's still going to be people in need.
Yeah.
And that's the way it goes, but we must take steps.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost hesitate to say that's the way it goes because, mm-hmm, it almost feels like then you're complacent.
You're like giving up on, like, it's not going to improve.
Exactly. Know? Exactly. Yeah. So it's like the fine line of, you know, knowing that there is more that we can do and there's always room for improvement, but, mm-hmm, also not being unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
But always, I think that it's super important to be like, you know, maybe we will be able to accomplish way more than we think.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, I would just say that starting with education, helping with events, helping out, removing the stigma,
mm-hmm,
you know, giving people a hand when you're able to, which, mm-hmm, is easier said than done, but all of those small little steps, like Shazza talked about, those baby steps,
mm-hmm,
you know, having homelessness and solving the homeless crisis as a platform, maybe,
mm-hmm,
for mayor, for premier, starting to introduce things like this instead of just being like, oh yeah, we're going to build housing and you guys are going to, mm-hmm, love it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. So really focusing on the problem and understanding what needs to be done, mm-hmm, at its core.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting here, it's easy to say that, oh, we need to put all of our resources towards this problem when we have inflation, when we have an economy, mm-hmm, that's struggling. But at the same time, we can only ignore the problem for so long.
Yeah.
Before it starts to become detrimental for generations ahead. You know, when we have kids, when you guys have kids, maybe, mm-hmm, like,
not this guy.
I know. I saw. That's why I looked at him. I saw the episode when Jess was on and his brother.
Yeah.
And he was like, why don't you want to have kids? Okay, I'll stop. No, I feel you. But at the same time, you know, generations ahead, what we can do to really help them and make people more educated,
mm-hmm,
in,
mm-hmm,
general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, from like a standpoint of like wanting to know like specifics and details and having a platform maybe around like politics and mayor, all, mm-hmm, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would be curious. Y'all remember when, what's it called? I think it was, I don't know if it was UNICEF or someone had said like, this is the amount of money it would take to solve world hunger, blah, blah, blah. Oh, they tossed that out.
Was it Elon
Musk? And then Elon Musk was like called their bluff and was like, I will sell that many shares in Tesla stock and pay for it if you can tell me the exact number. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I would be curious to know in Vancouver, how much it would actually cost to create enough homes in that kind of, like there's a place in Richmond where there's homes specifically for the homeless, right? Mm-hmm. People who are in poverty. To give them a consistent place,
mm-hmm,
how much would it actually cost to create this kind of infrastructure and put these things in place? How would it affect our taxes? All that kind of thing. I'd be curious of the number, mm-hmm, like a specific number.
Yeah.
Because they were using like those like portable shipping crate kind of like things to build these homes.
Yeah.
Right. How much would that cost? Fucking pull a few crates, create some homes, mm-hmm, and then make that the alternative to tearing down Tent City.
Yeah.
Anyways, I wanted to just kind of wrap things up there and say thank you to the both of you for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate just taking the time, first of all, but also shining a light both here in this conversation today, mm-hmm, but every day in what you're doing, right? Yeah. I mean, repping the hoodies, way to go. Life of Giving is hopefully going to be something that we see more and more in our, mm-hmm, city. I think, mm-hmm, it would be awesome to hear your name pop up here and there over time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hopeful for you two to keep growing what you're doing and to maybe have more and more events, you know, and maybe lead some of those workshops like you talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be awesome to see in the future.
Yeah.
Because awareness is important and we can't just pretend that this problem doesn't exist in our city.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And thank you so much for having us on. Mm. Thank you for having the podcast.
Yeah.
I know I already told this to Ruben, but also Kabir, thank you for, you know, just sitting here and listening, because I think a lot of the time, a lot of us see ourselves in you in the sense that, in not a weird way, but in the sense that, in the sense that, you know, sometimes you just sit back and you listen, yeah, and that means so much, because a lot of the time we don't have a lot to say, but we deal with the same struggles that other people deal with. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I know that, yeah, it's fantastic. And the dynamic between you two is fantastic.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Phenomenal, guys. Really appreciate it. Yeah, man.
God damn it. Yeah,
these guys are good guys.
Yeah, cool.
Life of Giving. What's the, there's like the little, it's not a catchphrase, but like there's like the,
oh,
the
after thing. All, life is about giving.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that's our slogan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nice.
There you go.
Didn't get to use that in today's podcast.
Hey, well, we got it in at the end. Life is about giving, everybody. And that's the message our viewers and listeners can take home this week. Give a little in your life for the next couple weeks before the next episode, and then keep giving. You don't stop. Life's all about giving.
Yeah.
If you're interested in checking you both out, you can head over to Instagram. Would that be the best spot now? Yeah.
Yeah. Life of Giving_Association for more information about our events and what we do.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Website's up as well.
The website is currently under maintenance, but should be up soon. As soon as you go to the Instagram, you'll see a link to everything.
Yeah. So, Linktree on there, right?
GoFundMe too.
Yeah, we got everything.
And the donations, just to be clear, like that's going towards like providing the food and the everything that you are able to get.
Yes, exactly. 100% is going
directly back. It is a nonprofit,
back.
Guys.
Yeah, it is. And we're not just calling it a nonprofit. It's actually a legal nonprofit under the BC, I can't remember what the act is called. Maybe I shouldn't go into law. No. absolutely. So everything that's donated is going to go right back to the community.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. And you have opportunities to volunteer. It's all great stuff. Everybody, we'll see you in 2 more weeks. We hope you all enjoyed this week's episode. And of course, like, comment, subscribe, all that kind of shit. Follow on Instagram, TikTok, and check these guys out. Yeah. Peace.